When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil.
Bellerín, otro defensor, otro disparo. Monreal, gol. Marca el futbolista español. Marca Nacho Monreal. Pim pam pum.
This is Arscast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arscast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnar Blog. James, a festive, goodly morning to you.
Yeah, goodly morning to you too. What could be more Christmassy than laughing at the misfortune of others? And thanks to Arsenal, we have that opportunity.
We certainly do. The outrage, the schadenfreude, that most precious of Christmas gifts was there for us yesterday, wasn't it? I said in the blog today, I never watch the post-game stuff, really, because, I like to sort of make my own mind up on things, and also I don't really care what Jamie Redknapp thinks about anything. So those two things push me away from post-match stuff. But I left it on yesterday, and I saw Ashley Barnes on TV absolutely fuming. His kids are going to get nothing for Christmas. He was so cross. And then Sean Dyche afterwards as well, just, you know, on Sky, complaining about us diving. That's how he sounds to me. That really hurt my throat, by the way. So I think I've fucked my voice for the rest of this podcast. But
imagine if you accidentally got stuck like that and you did just sound like Sean Dyche from now on.
Oh, my God.
What a curse.
Yeah, it would be.
Christmas curse.
I suggest we'd lose listeners fast if that were the case.
Perhaps so. But he was very much, yeah, cast as the Grinch yesterday in our festive tale. I mean, I actually didn't see the post-match, but I have since sorted it out. And if you haven't seen it, it is worth doing, especially in light of the result. It's enjoyable seeing quite how angry it made them. Sean Dyche's sort of plaintive cries of "What about the children?"
Yeah, exactly.
Seeming particularly absurd, I think, in his post-match press conference.
We can't be teaching these children to dive. That's abhorrent. Let's never teach children to dive. We've got a responsibility as custodians of the game of football to show the game in the best light and to set an example for these young impressionable kids who we would like to go out on the pitch and kick the shit out of the opposition. Violence.
Yeah.
Ultra violence. That's no problem. Kids need to learn how to fucking stand up for themselves. But none of this soft diving shit. Oh, it's funny. Yeah, it really is funny.
Teach them when they're young. You've got to get them when they're young. And that's when they must learn about elbowing and stamping and things like that.
Yeah.
I've got a mate who's a Spurs fan that I follow on Twitter. And they played Burnley a couple of weeks ago. And I was sort of quite disappointed at the time because I think Spurs got like a stoppage time winner, or certainly a really late winner. But after the game, I remember reading on his timeline saying, you know, fuck Burnley, they deserve everything they get. They're the worst, most horrific team I've ever seen us play. And I kind of took it with a pinch of salt. You know, I was like, well, they seem like Spurs fan. They seem like the heroes, the plucky heroes of this story, the underdogs. You know, my heart's with Burnley, poor Burnley. And then I saw the game yesterday and I was like, oh no, he was right. They are absolutely horrible and sort of not very good this season either. So they've sort of lost any of their redeeming features. They feel a bit stokey, didn't they, yesterday?
Yeah, quite stokey indeed. You know, the battles we've had with them down the years, we've had some results against them, which have, I'd say they fucking hate us. I'd say they, at this point, really hate us because there's, like, the injury time winners, the handball winner, there was a late penalty, wasn't there, where we, you know, they just equalised and then we got a penalty and there was all kinds of stuff has gone on between us and Burnley down the years. And look, I don't really have a problem with a team that wants to come and be physical. I don't. You know, I know there's a line and we don't want things to cross the line, but, you know, if you are a limited football team, it's understandable that you will try and play the game to your own strengths. And Burnley's strengths are obviously the physical side of it. Get long balls in there, challenge, disrupt, make it difficult. I really don't have any problem with that. First, because I understand it, having played for football for many years in a team that, you know, wasn't the greatest football team of all time. But, you know, if we could put ourselves about, we gave ourselves a chance in certain matches. But also because I think this Arsenal team is more resilient. It can stand up to it. It's got better character. It's perhaps a bit more physically durable. We've got a couple of players in there who are absolutely willing to give a bit back, which I really enjoy. But if you're going to come and play like that, don't fucking cry and piss and moan afterwards when, if you give a guy a knee in the back when you're on a yellow card, he lies on the ground for a while and is in pain because you've actually fucking battered him. You know, don't fucking expect people just to take it. Oh, that's Burnley. That's what they should do. We should just accept that. No, you get it back and you get it back in different ways. And that's football. And that's what happened yesterday. Arsenal stood up to it. They played the game cleverly based on how Burnley were playing the game. We made it difficult for the referee. I'm not sure the referee was great for either side, but that's neither here nor there. But I don't know why we should just be expected to take a pounding from a big bunch of fucking brutes and not do anything about it. So, you know, by all means play like that, but just shut the fuck up afterwards. Blaming diving and children and fucking, what a prick.
If you're going to play by those rules, you've got to accept it if the opposition choose to meet you in that way. And I think what the case is with Arsenal is that for years you could come to Arsenal and play like that and play that game. And I don't think we would go toe-to-toe. I don't think we would say, OK, you want to sort of bend the rules, you want to play a little bit physically, we'll match you. I don't think we've had that in our team. But yesterday we did. And, you know, I don't think anybody exemplified more that more than Socrates, who I think was, I mean, look, there were some naughty moments, but I think amongst them, I think he had a brilliant game as well. I was looking at the stats.
Amazing stats, yeah.
Yeah, he made 11 clearances compared to one for Maitland-Niles, Monreal and Kolasinac. They all made one each. He made 11.
Well, he made 11 clearances, 7 out of 7 headed clearances. You know, he, what did he pass the ball at? Something like 96% or 95% pass completion. You know, he was absolutely the rock around which we needed to build our defence yesterday because it was so makeshift. And look, I completely agree with you. Not only was he, you know, he spoke afterwards, you know, do you relish games like this? And he's going, yeah, of course. But, you know, it's just football. That's all it is when he was asked about the thing between himself and Barnes. That's football. And look, was he a bit naughty maybe when he saw the ball out of play there that time? Maybe. Maybe he was. I'd like to think he was. Barnes reacted, and then he, you know, I thought the best part of the Socrates performance was the foul in which he picked up the yellow card. Because he was doing it in a way which was designed to provoke a reaction from Barnes, a retaliation. He knew he was going to get a yellow card anyway. He just held on and very nearly got Burnley down to 10 men. And I'm absolutely 100% okay and on board with that kind of behaviour from our players. Because fuck it, every other fucker does it. And I don't see why we shouldn't. We don't have to be whiter than white or you know, the football, what's the word I'm looking for? We don't have to, like, aspire to play this pure football. You've got to have a little bit of the dark arts, if you like. You've got to have a bit of that about you. Otherwise, you're going to get, not that you're going to get turned over, but yesterday's game might well have been a one-point game rather than a three-point game.
Yeah, you know, there were shades of Arsenal heroes like Martin Keown, I think, in what Socrates was doing yesterday. It was just that thing of sort of psychologically needling a striker. You know, even if you don't get him booked, you are affecting his mood and his tone. And I know Barnes scored later in the game, but it just felt like Socrates, for the most part, had his number. And everything that Barnes tried with him, he showed that he was not only willing to take it, but that he could offer something back. And I really enjoyed his performance. I think he's got better and better, really, since he's arrived. And right now, he's looking, I think, about as good as we could have hoped. I mean, he's quicker than I expected. He's better on the ball than I expected. But it is that physicality, it is that edge that I think makes him a little bit different to some of our other options at centre-half.
Yeah, but I mean, I think we're also doing him a little bit of a disservice if we just focus on the shithousery, if you like, you know, or his willingness. Because yesterday we had a young midfielder at right back, a left back who is clearly struggling physically now, at this point, Nacho Monreal, he went off again playing at centre half. And we had Kolasinac, of course, who is a left back. I know he's more suitable as a wing back, but he is a left back. He's played a lot of football at left back in his career. Nevertheless, when Monreal went off, we then had a back three with a veteran fullback as part of that back three, and the other part of the back three was a central midfielder. And I know Xhaka is very willing and will do his best and is quite happy to help the team out there, but we still had that young midfielder on the right-hand side. Kolasinac was dangerous on the left-hand side, but we needed somebody to keep it all together. We needed somebody to show that bit of leadership and composure and defensive organisation, and I think Socrates did that. There was one moment, I can't remember if it was first half or second half, it could have been late enough in the first half, and they put the ball down the right-hand side, and all of a sudden, from like way over the other side, Socrates had read the game and come over and snuffed out the danger, and whether he gave a throw or whatever it was, or cleared it upfield, I can't quite remember. But I remember thinking, that is a guy who is running the yards for the other guys who either can't do it or aren't defensively aware enough to know that that's where they should be. So I think he took on a huge amount of responsibility yesterday in his performance, and he deserves real, real credit for it. I thought he was great.
Yeah, I think there are signs of leadership from him too. I mean, you know, again, there's the kind of little moments where he will support a teammate in a confrontation, or he'll cajole, you know, the guys around him back into position. I think that he is growing in influence, and that role at the heart of a makeshift back three is the one we asked to play Laurent Koscielny last week, and we saw, you know, how that panned out. Very, very tricky for him to keep that line together, admittedly without much practice, but Socrates managed it yesterday. And every time I sort of plan forward and I think about, okay, well, if we play with a back four, if we play with a back three, you know, every time I try and build a defence for after the January transfer window, at the moment, Socrates is the man who I think I would have in it. You know, with Rob holding out, I think he's our first choice centre half, and I think he showed why yesterday. It was a really excellent performance from someone who has steadily kind of grown into this Arsenal team, grown into this league, but now I think looks right at home. And you can tell the fans love him because he plays with that absolute commitment, and he will do whatever it takes to win.
Yeah, look, at some point he is going to go too far. There's no question.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, in some ways yesterday, I feared for him, you know, definitely, especially once he was on a booking. I was like, well, this guy is treading a tightrope now. But I suppose
Did you notice,
is the benefit of experience, isn't it?
Yeah, there was a moment where, I think it was quite early in the second half when Guendouzi got flattened by Barnes, and there was a little stoppage in play. I think it was for that one anyway, but Emery called Socrates over to the sideline. Socrates went over and the two of them were in conversation, and he is experienced, but I can only guess at what was being said, but it would have been, look, just remember how important you are to this team today. You have a big responsibility because you are our only natural central defender, and they're going to be a tough proposition. They're going to get balls in the box. They're going to make life difficult for us. You know, you have to stay on the pitch. So, you know, be aware in how you make challenges and everything else. And I think he was absolutely step perfect in that second half. There will be a day, I think, where he'll go too far, and it will annoy us and it will frustrate us. And we'll say, you know what, a player of his experience, he should know better, blah, blah, blah. And we'll deal with that as and when the time comes. But in terms of yesterday, I thought he had a fantastic impact on the game. You know, at the time, in the second half, I was thinking, this isn't great again. This is a bit nervy. This is not as controlled a performance as I would like. With the benefit of hindsight, I'm looking at that defence and I'm wondering what else can we really expect from a team which knows deep down within itself that it doesn't really have a strong defensive platform. You know, it's absolutely cobbled together, sellotaped together, little bits of twine and rope or whatever, sticky back plastic, keeping a back four then a back five together. You know, it's a bit of a mess back there. So I think in the cold light of day, I can not forgive, but I can understand why we weren't necessarily as on top of the game as people would have liked, particularly after they scored.
Yeah, I think, you know, we've talked all season about how Emery wants us to build up from the back, but the back is a mess at the moment. Yeah. It's people playing out of position. And the guy who, you know, is the fulcrum of our team, really, in terms of what he does with the ball, is Granit Xhaka. And we're spending, you know, whole games or parts of games without him in central midfield. And I do think that's hurting us. But it's a kind of a needs-must situation. I mean, losing Monreal during the first half yesterday, is he another huge blow? I mean, I was looking at him at centre-half and thinking, actually, he looks all right there alongside Socrates. Yeah. You know, I think I've got quite a lot of faith in him to play at centre-half, even in a four. And then suddenly he pulls up with some sort of muscle problem. I didn't even notice he was injured until the sub was being made. And suddenly you think, well, we're right back in the shit again in terms of our personnel. So it's a really tricky time. And I do think, you know, there are issues sometimes with the selection and with the way we've managed games. But I do think the manager is actually doing pretty well to kind of continually keep evolving and shifting and changing this back line and managing to pull up results here and there.
Yeah, look, when you don't play well and win, you can get away with it for a couple of times. But I think there's something more to this team this season. The ability to win games without playing that well is an actual ability. I know we've talked about riding our luck, and I absolutely stand by that, but the more the season goes on, the more we're able to grind out results. And Emery is having to change his team week in, week out, and I think it's to his credit that we're getting those results. It won't always work, as we saw last week at Southampton, but for the most part, there's something more to this team than there has been in the last couple of years. Let's talk a little bit about the team. Mesut Ozil back, captain the side.
As
captain, yeah. Look, he is one of the captains. And I guess there must be a pecking order in terms of the captains, because Xhaka is one of the captains as well. But I think it was quite a deliberate decision from Emery to make him the captain and to bring him back. He left him out in midweek. It was clearly, I think, anyway, designed to get a reaction out of Ozil. I think if you haven't already listened to the Arsenal Vision podcast this week, it's their post-Tottenham episode. Clive talks really well about why Emery has dealt with Ozil in the way that he's dealt with him over the last week or so. He has to, he has to be strong in the dressing room. Absolutely has to be. And there was, I think, a response from Ozil yesterday. It's never been his talent or quality or vision that's been in question. It's been the application of that on a consistent basis on the pitch. And we saw yesterday what he can bring to this team, because that pass to Kolasinac, I think Kolasinac, A, deserves a huge amount of credit for making the run and getting there. Yep. Like, really, really great run and really fantastic pace to get in behind the defender. But Ozil's vision and ability to pick that pass out was, it's second to none. And that was the difference between 0-0 and 1-0.
It's Ozil at his best. I'm pretty sure we've seen that pass before. I seem to remember him finding Nacho Monreal in a similar fashion, for Monreal to score at the far post, I think some point last season. But it is an astonishing pass. It's one of those great freeze-frame moments where, at the moment he is about to play the ball, I think Kolasinac is almost out of frame on the television pictures. You know, you can't really spot him. Ozil does see him coming, and it's just beautifully weighted. I mean, the control on the pass to stop it sort of skipping beyond Kolasinac and out of touch and still get that bend, still get that pace on it. I mean, it's a magnificent pass, and I agree with you. Kolasinac's great strength, really, I think, is his, well, apart from his strength, his off-the-ball running is outstanding. You know, his timing of runs to get inside and beyond the fullback is brilliant. But the touch that he produces back for Aubameyang, watching it in real time from the other end of the pitch, I actually didn't realise that he'd produced that touch. I thought it was sort of a deflection off the defender. Mm. But it's really well weighted back to Aubameyang and a really good first-time finish. I mean, it's actually a brilliant goal. And I think there were about 18 or 19 passes in the build-up to it. So fantastic to see Ozil give that response. I thought he was much more committed on the day than we've seen in certain performances, certainly the Southampton one. And I mean, I thought he looked knackered by the end of the game. I think the fact we'd made other substitutions due to injury is probably what kept him on the field. But I thought it was a much better performance from him. And if Emery's idea was to try and motivate him to try the best out of him, you have to say that so far, it seems to have been a decent move.
Yep, for sure. Look, it's a first little baby step back to redemption in some ways for Mesut Ozil. We need him to produce that in the next game at Brighton, and we need him to produce it at Liverpool if he plays against Liverpool. So that might be something we can discuss again. But no, a really, really fantastic pass, a really good goal as well. And Kolasinac has coupled now his forward running with much better backward running and much more defensive awareness. Perhaps it was a matter of just getting some match fitness and being able to get up and down the pitch, which he seems much better able to do.
He does look fitter now.
He does, but he's so dangerous, isn't he, in the final third? So, I mean, he's maybe more effective as an attacker than a defender, which is a bit of an issue for a defender.
Being picked.
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah, but he's become really important to the way we're playing.
He has. I mean, it reminds me a bit of, you know, Manchester City, particularly in Pep's first season, where their game was all about getting their, you know, attacking fullbacks in behind and getting those pullbacks. And you thought, how can they keep doing this? How are opposition not wise to this? And Kolasinac has almost got that level of danger to him now. I mean, he's so good. He's so, so good, as I say, with the timing of the runs. And to be honest, his pullbacks are pretty decent. You know, sometimes they miss their target, but they're always into good areas. And I just think that he's become integral to the way we play. I mean, we played a sort of slightly different formation. We've seen it, I think we saw it from the start against Huddersfield, didn't we? It was three in central midfield with Guendouzi, Xhaka and Elneny, and then Ozil behind Lacazette and Aubameyang. So really, all the width has to come from the fullbacks, even though you're playing with a back four. It was Kolasinac and Maitland-Niles pushing on, and there's a huge emphasis on them to provide that attacking threat. But they did do it in that first half, and especially once we switched to three at the back, it was almost even more so on them to get forward. But I think he's been one of the surprises of the season, really, because I think even in the first couple of games of the season, I seem to remember having conversations with people, maybe with you, about, you know, it's probably never going to work for him at Arsenal. We need to cut our losses. But I think he is showing rather impressively that he has got something to offer. I agree with you. It is much more about what he does in the final third of the pitch than anywhere else, actually. I think he has got better, but I think that, you know, it is his attacking threat that makes him such a valuable asset right now.
Yeah. He was involved in the second goal as well, picking up the ball from Guendouzi, a good ball from Guendouzi, setting him free down the left-hand side. I thought it was really interesting that Aubameyang spoke in his post-match interview about how they'd practiced those kind of finishing scenarios in training the day before the game. Whether it was like, you know, the ball in that position with a defender in front of you, what do you do? The finish was absolutely emphatic, wasn't it?
Yeah, he thumped it into the near post. And maybe not what you would say is a typical Aubameyang goal. You know, you imagine him with those maybe more delicate finishes.
Do you, though?
You know, the side foot.
Do you, though? Because when you think about it this season, he scored a couple of really, some crackers. You know, I do know the kind of finish you're talking about, but you think about the goal against Spurs. And there was a goal from outside the box against Fulham.
Cardiff, yeah.
And Cardiff?
Cardiff,
maybe,
I think it was. Maybe Fulham as well. Yeah, but in both instances, they were kind of...
They're controlled, I guess.
Curled shots, I guess. Yeah, the inside of the foot. Whereas this one, he really just put, you know, his laces through it, which I feel like I haven't seen him do too often. But it's a great goal, brilliant goal. And his footwork before he takes the shot is immaculate, you know, to create the little space, little gap at the near post is there, and he fires it beyond Joe Hart, which isn't always the hardest task. Not quite sure how he's become Burnley's number one goal. England's number four, they were chanting at him from the stands yesterday. And, that was a brilliantly timed goal for us as well, because after we'd gone 1-0 up, we hadn't really pressed home the advantage, had we? You thought 14 minutes in, we go 1-0 up against Burnley. Ideal, the game's going to open up. But actually, it didn't really suit them to open it up too much, because as long as the advantage was only one goal, they were kind of still in the game. And I think we didn't have a shot between the 20th minute and half-time or something like it. So when we got that goal straight after half-time, I was like, oh, fantastic, you know, we're in the clear here. But it was never... I mean, I think 3-1 sort of as a final scoreline suggests that this was really comfortable, but it never really felt like that to me.
No, it didn't really feel that comfortable. Even at 2-0, I was expecting a bit of an onslaught from Burnley. What did you make of their goal? Was there a free kick? Am I remembering this right? Because I haven't had a chance to look back on it. But a free kick before they scored, or a corner or something, but about five of them were offside. And play continued. Am I remembering this right?
That, I think, is correct, yeah. I don't remember the exact flow of the game, but I think that is right, that I was surprised it was one of those kind of second phase issues, but there were genuinely five Burnley players offside, I think, from... It was a free kick, I think, about 30 yards out.
Right.
And nevertheless, when the ball came back into the box, I don't think Arsenal could be too happy with the hesitation we showed that led to the ball rebounding to Ashley Barnes to stick it in at the near post.
No, it was scrappy stuff, wasn't it? It really was.
Yeah, I think Xhaka sort of had his... He had his back, he was sort of facing his own goal, and then I think he had Torreira in front of him, and there was just a moment of hesitation between the two of them as to who was actually going to knock it clear. I don't think either one really did with any conviction. And then the ball, I guess it was lucky for Burnley, rebounded for Barnes, and as the pantomime villain of the day, he was always going to score, I guess.
Yeah, I did like Lichtsteiner's reaction to it, pounding the ground in frustration, which I can understand. And at that point, you know, 2-1, we didn't really control the game the way I thought we might. But again, it comes back to having that defensive platform. I'm not sure midfield quite operated as well as it might have done.
I don't think Elneny had a great game, if I'm honest. Like,
no.
Or Guendouzi, actually.
No, I don't think either were that good.
No, I thought both were below par. And actually, once we had to move Xhaka into the back three, it kind of felt like a matter of time until Torreira had to come on. You know, it never felt like we were going to get through the 90 minutes without him.
I was a little bit surprised we didn't see Aaron Ramsey. I suspect that might mean we'll see Aaron Ramsey at Brighton on Wednesday. But nevertheless, he brought on Torreira, and then he brought on Alex Iwobi. Burnley were looking for a penalty. What was your thought on the penalty incident with Kolasinac and whoever the fuck it was? I can't remember.
I don't think I don't think it was a penalty. Did you?
I didn't really think it was a penalty. I think if you get pushed in the back, you know, and you fall backwards, it shows that maybe you're looking for it. Nevertheless, I have to say, I worry a little bit about that part of Kolasinac's game. He is prone to making those kind of things look a bit too obvious, you know?
Right.
It was a really obvious two hands in the back. And I think another referee might well have given that as a penalty. You know, you just can't tell with referees and Premier League referees. But, you know, the two hands went into his back and he could have just been bracing himself for the guy backing into him, you know. But when it looks like it does in real time, there are referees who will give that as a penalty, I think. But for me...
He needs some lessons from Socrates, doesn't he, really?
I mean, yeah.
He needs a lesson from one of the masters.
He is, you know, if you watch him from set pieces, though... He is very much man-focused rather than ball-focused. And I know that could be because of our the way we're set up or the job that he's being asked to do. But he is quite... He has a tendency to sort of hang on to the man and push and pull and shove. And, you know, that's fine. But just sometimes for me, it's a little bit obvious and I worry that we might get penalised. At some point, but there you go. That's just me worrying.
He's not a subtle player, is he? In any way, Kolasinac.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
He's one of the strangest footballers we've talked about already, but that I've ever seen at Arsenal. I mean, I can't quite figure it out. You know, there are parts of the pitch where I just don't trust him with the ball. You know, I almost don't have huge faith in him to play a 10 or 15 yard pass, but then once he's in that final third, he feels like, you know, a real quality player. It's odd, isn't it? It's just got very rough edges to him. But he's very, very effective at times.
Yeah. So, look, the game was winding down towards injury time. We got a third goal. Iwobi involved in the move, drove forward, gave it to Ozil into the box. I thought it was opening up for him. Do you think it was a pass or a shot? Do you think he was shooting?
I think he was shooting, yeah. I think he was shooting. Do you think pass, maybe?
Yeah, I just thought the connection was not quite strong enough for a shot.
But that's a Mesut Ozil shot, you know. He's not someone who's ever going to produce one of those Aubameyang finishes that we saw for the second goal. Yeah, he's always going to pass it into the net. I thought it was probably offside for Iwobi, but...
Yeah, but just like barely. And also, who gives a fuck? You know.
I was pleased for him as well because you know, we've talked about his confidence maybe being down a bit in the last couple of weeks. We've talked about his end product being lacking. And there was that incident, wasn't there, where he got into the box, did a load of step overs, and I think was dispossessed. And the crowd were less than pleased, I think, at that point in time. But, you know, he produced a decent enough finish and got the goal. And hopefully that'll see him getting back towards the kind of form he was showing us in September, October time.
Yeah. No, it was good. And I think, you know, he'll get a boost from that goal. You know, if one of the criticisms is that he hasn't had enough end product, then there's some end product for you and he can build on that, hopefully. I have a question about the Lacazette reaction. We'll do that in part two, you know, but that was a thing. In the end, though, it was a win that we absolutely needed, a win that we got. And as we said at the top, the fact that it annoyed Burnley so much makes it all the sweeter. I'm just watching the game again here. I just got it on. And there's the bit where cross comes in from the right hand side. It's Barnes and Lichtsteiner. And I remember looking at this at the time going, what is Lichtsteiner doing? What is he doing? And basically, he's on Barnes, and as the ball comes in, he sort of flings himself into the air. It is a dive.
Yeah, I mean,
it is a dive. I mean, it's a really risky thing to do, though. He could have just stayed with the man.
Bear in mind, I was sat right at the other end of the pitch. So when I saw these Sean Dyche quotes about diving, I had no idea really what he was talking about. I was like, I can't even think of the incidents in question. But then Match of the Day apparently highlighted that Lichtsteiner moment. And a Granit Xhaka incident as well. I don't know if you've seen.
Yeah, but that's one that players do all the time, is where they get themselves in front of the ball. Defenders in particular do this all the time. They get themselves in front of the ball in the box and they sort of invite a tiny bit of contact and then they go down. And 99.9999 times out of 100, they get a free kick there. So that's not really a dive. That's just playing the game the way it's played these days. You know, Burnley defenders would do it. Every defender in the Premier League would do exactly what Xhaka did there. I don't think that's a dive, per se. I think that's just making sure you get the free kick in the right area because, you know, that's what you do in that situation. A dive is, you know, something like where you go into the box and you pretend to fall over somebody's leg in order to win a penalty or a free kick or whatever it might be. For me, that's what diving really is. And not this.
Is that what Lichtsteiner is doing?
Lichtsteiner is absolutely diving, yeah. It's a crazy
it's a huge
thing to
risk,
do.
Isn't it?
It is a massive risk because the referee could look at that and say, well, mate, you've just thrown yourself over there, play on. And Barnes would have been clean through. So, you know, while I respect the commitment to the shithousery, which is a diplomatic way of putting it. It was a hell of a risky thing to do. But look, it worked out in the end. It was a moment that I think we can enjoy in hindsight. So let's do that and let's not worry about the other part of it. Look at this one. This is part of what the referee got wrong yesterday. The game is just playing here. 71st minute, 72nd minute. Westwood comes in, smashes right through Xhaka as Xhaka's challenging for the ball.
That was a bad challenge.
He jumped hip height into Xhaka. You know, that's the kind of shit. That's worse than diving for me. If you don't want children to take something bad from the game, don't show them that. Don't set that as your example. Hurt your opponent deliberately. There was no intent there to play the ball. It was just to clatter the man. So, you know, they can stick their fucking holier-than-thou shit right up their fucking arses, as far as I'm concerned.
And what a good 3 points it turned out to be. Because obviously Chelsea got beat by Leicester. Mm-hmm. So we move level on points with them. Spurs have got a potentially tricky game. I mean, you might know the result when you listen to this, but they've got Everton away.
Theo today. Walcott with the winner for Everton today.
Yeah, that would be lovely.
I'm telling you.
I would. And in the context of the race for the top four, it was a good 3 points. And also, I think yesterday probably a bit of a reminder of how tricky and how odd at times these Christmas fixtures can be and how much it is just about trying to grind out results and accumulate as many points as possible. You know, obviously Palace with that massive upset at City. This is a decent start. And we've got to go on and get the other more 3 points at Brighton.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the table can shift quite considerably around this time of the year because of how much football is played. so you can find yourself in a much healthier position or a seemingly much less healthy position. And we've started that well. And we're only 7 points behind City now. I think it's on, James. I think it's on.
It's on. Well, what's on? Second?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, look, I'd take it. I'd definitely take it.
For sure. All right. Well, look, we're going to leave it there for part one. We're going to come back with your questions and more in part two right after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to this festive Arscast Extra. And this is part two of the show where we answer the questions that you sent to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, and also on the Arsblog Facebook page, which is facebook.com/thearsblog. Would you like to go first? I give you the gift of going first this Christmas, James.
Thank you very much. I got you socks.
Oh, cool.
Everyone needs socks, right?
Yeah.
Tiki Teckers says on Twitter, is this the most bastardy Arsenal we've seen since the Invincibles?
Maybe. I think it's...
I'm trying to think now.
Yeah, I think because we have some players who are just naturally predisposed to that kind of behaviour. You know, the Socrates we've already talked about. Lichtsteiner is clearly into a bit of that. I'm not sure what else there is really in the team. Lucas Torreira likes to tackle, so that's certainly something. But I just think there is a little bit of a change in mentality. A little bit of a change in mentality about what this team feels like it's capable of. Like, I always felt it was self-defeating in a way. Remember when we used to go to Stoke with Danielson and Song and, Fabregas. Yeah. I'm not saying Fabregas was a shrinking violet in any way, but he wasn't a particularly big player. That as soon as it did get physical or a bit too physical, we felt like we couldn't cope with it because we didn't have the characters on the pitch who would stand up and combat that kind of treatment of our players. You know, we could complain about it or we could lie down and they'd all sing "Same Old Arsenal, Always Cheating," which they do whenever our players get fouled, which I have to say, it annoys me in a visceral way, that chant. And I know it shouldn't. I'm a 47-year-old man. But every time I hear a stadium sing that chant I would like a sinkhole to open up and swallow every single one of the home fans, leaving the away fans, of course, perfectly safe and sound. But I do think we've got more to us this season. I also think probably the fact it's a new manager means that players are a bit more inclined to stand up for themselves or to show that they've got the character that this manager might like, you know? So I think there's an element of that to it as well. You know, I'm not sure we're massive bastards. I'd say Burnley are more bastardy than we are, but I think just we're more capable of coping with the bastardry.
Yes, I think we're probably the most bastardy Arsenal team we've seen for a while. I think compared to a lot of other teams, we're not that bastardy. I mean, the players you mentioned were Sokratis, Lichtsteiner. I think I'd probably throw Guendouzi into that mix too. I know he's only 19
Would
or something.
You?
But yeah, I just think there's a bit of gamesmanship about him. I feel like he, you know, to be honest, I mean, his dive the other week is a bit of an example of it. I think that he is, I think he's got needle in him. And I'm not complaining. I like that.
No, sure.
But yeah, beyond that, it's not like, I mean, I suppose Kolasinac, you know, he seems like a very good-natured guy, but he's not someone who loses many physical battles, you know, if it's about shoulder to shoulder rather than a foot race. But yeah, I think it is a bit more collective, isn't it? Like you say, it's more about that capacity to grind things out, that kind of will to win, that desire to put the collective first. I think that is what's really changing. And I'm sure those characters are part of it.
I'm just going to give you a question here because it comes from Isaac Nauruzi. I think I'm pronouncing that wrongly, but nevertheless, I'm doing my best. He says, I saw Unai Emery having a dig at Sean Dyche on the touchline. Do you think he's instilling some of this shithousery in the team? Is it an element of his game plan? This also applies to the feistiness we see from some of our players that aren't normally known for that. I thought that was fucking great. I really enjoyed seeing Emery give a bit to Sean Dyche towards the end of the game. I can't imagine what he was saying. Wasn't good half to
him. I'm sure Sean Dyche had absolutely no idea what Emery was saying to him. Having watched a few press conferences, Sean Dyche was probably absolutely bewildered. But I liked it too because, you know, I think it shows a little bit, because he was kind of doing it on Arsenal's behalf. Do you know what I mean? It felt like a little moment where he was sort of felt more at home with the club and he was kind of fighting our fight. I really liked it, yeah.
Okay, it's my question, I think. Okay, this is from H, who's at AFC Tube. And he says, what do you make of Lacazette's reaction to coming off? Some frustration with his recent treatment creeping in?
So, I haven't seen it, is the quick answer. I could tell that he was frustrated on the pitch, actually. There were a couple of moments where the ball didn't go his way and he was throwing his arms up. So what did he actually do when he was brought off?
Well, he came off and he shook hands with the manager and then he sort of was talking quite animatedly to a couple of people on the bench and he didn't look happy with the decision and he sat there and he was like, you know, having a bit of a moan. And then the cameras came back to him at one point and he was sitting, I can't remember who he was sitting beside, but the focus was on him and he had one of his calves taped up or strapped up really quite well, and he was undoing the bandage and what have you, and he sat there and he had a sort of unhappy look on his face and he threw the bandages away and then it went back to the match. So it was really a player making it very clear that he wasn't happy to be taken off. Unai Emery's reaction himself was to say, yeah, I like it. I like when a striker comes off and he's unhappy, you know?
He also said, so I think quite tellingly, he was like, Lacazette is coming back to the best Lacazette, which suggests that he's not been, you know, left out of the team in recent weeks by accident, that Emery feels there's been a bit of a dip in his performance, and whether that's something that's reflected in the statistical analysis or just something he's observed, you know, it means that there is a thought behind it. I was quite surprised he came off, just because Aubameyang is really racking up a lot of minutes at the moment.
Yeah.
And I sort of expected them to share the playing time a little bit more in this period with all these intense games. But I've got no issue with it, really. I mean, look, he's a player who wanted to score. I don't remember him having a shot in anger, really, in the game.
No.
I know he laid on the second goal, didn't he, for Aubameyang with a nice little pass.
There was one moment where the ball came to him from just after Burnley scored, I think. Kolasinac got down the left, as he does, and he pulled the ball back for Lacazette. And do you remember he scored a goal quite similar? Again, it was a cross, and he kind of took the ball in one motion and turned and scored with it. Last season, I think it was. It was a really nice finish, and this time the ball just got away from him. So maybe there is a bit of rustiness, and maybe he has been affected by this injury, and maybe, again, it's part of Emery's man management, is to frustrate players a little bit. Maybe that's what it is. Mm. You know, no striker likes to come off, particularly late in a game. I could understand the change in a way to bring on Iwobi, maybe to give us somebody who could carry the ball when we got it, you know, but I really don't have any issue with a player being pissed off when they get substituted, you know? Did it happen to Alexis a couple of times? And you knew Alexis was making it all about him. And it was about his ego and everything else. And I think Lacazette's frustration was just basically pure frustration at not scoring, at not being able to get a goal, and of being denied the final 15 minutes of a game in which he has said himself, hasn't he, a few times, as the game goes on, defenders get tired or strikers get a bit more space and more opportunities to score goals. In the end, we won. Iwobi scored. I think he'll be quite happy that the team won. And next time he plays, maybe there's just a bit more from him, or he'll be determined to give a bit more.
I mean, ultimately, this feistiness that we've seen from Lacazette this season, I think, has been a very welcome addition to his game. If you think back to his first season at Arsenal, he was getting brought off at that point in every single match. And, you know, his head was generally down and kind of like, well, OK, off I come, off I trot. But now, you know, he's playing with that much more confidence, that much more swagger, that he is unhappy when he comes off. And that's fine. I think it's absolutely fine. And I think, you know, it's what you want to see. It's what you want to see from him. And I think it's part of his kind of renewed sort of attitude that he's brought to this season. Yeah. I think it's part of what's made him a better player. So I've got no issue at all. I do slightly worry about Aubameyang's legs, just because he's playing a lot of football at the moment. But I imagine there's going to be some rotation coming up, definitely, for example, in the FA Cup.
Just speaking of Aubameyang, I'll do another question here. This comes from Akshay Kamath, who's at Akshay_Kamath14 on Twitter. Bakary Sanya was in the Sky Sports studio yesterday, looking very cool, I have to say. Sanya said yesterday, Aubameyang isn't world-class at the moment for us. What are your thoughts?
I mean, he's the top scorer in the Premier League, which is pretty decent going. And I thought his finishes yesterday were from pretty much the only chances he had in the game, particularly the second one. That was a world-class finish. Fantastic strike. I mean, it's difficult. I never quite know what world-class means, but I don't think there are many teams in the world who would not pick Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang given the chance. Let's put it like that.
That's fair.
Even if I think of the best teams in England, you know, Liverpool and Man City, I genuinely think both of them would find room for Aubameyang in their team. Maybe City would rotate him with Aguero, you know. But aside from that, I think that he would walk into pretty much any team because he's such a fantastic goal scorer, and he's scoring a lot of goals in a team who aren't top of the league or anything like it.
Yeah.
So I think that's got to be considered pretty close to world class.
Yeah, I
probably would say.
It's such a nebulous term, isn't it? Because if you, let's say, define world class as being Lionel Messi, then nobody else, apart from maybe Cristiano Ronaldo, is world class. But if you were to say world class was players like Hazard, players of that stature, I think Aubameyang is certainly up in that category. When you look at the goal contributions that he's made since he joined this club, it's a remarkable scoring record, and his involvement in goals is incredible. Was it something like he's been involved in 19 goals in 14 starts or whatever it is? I can't quite figure out. I saw it doing the rounds last night. But, you know, in Premier League terms, goals and assists based on the amount of appearances that he has made for us, it's an incredible record. And can you have that kind of a record if you're not nominally world class? It's difficult, but I think there aren't too many teams in the world that would turn down their noses at a Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, and that's for me maybe the best measure. Is like, what team would he get into in the Premier League? I think he'd probably get into most of them. Most managers would have him.
Yeah,
apart from
really
Burnley.
Think so. And Burnley wouldn't like him. Not elbowy enough. And I think that's another sort of good news story to come out of the Burnley game, is that he had been on a mini drought, shall we say. What was it, 5 games without a goal, something like that. So for him to end that quite emphatically and get a brace and be back on the scoring trail, I think that's a really positive thing, because he can be the difference for us. He's shown that before, and he showed it again yesterday.
Yeah.
Let's have a question. This is a question looking ahead to Boxing Day from Tom Woolsgrove, who's at Desmond_Dex on Twitter. And Tom says, do we risk playing Torreira, who is one booking away from a suspension, against Brighton on Boxing Day with Liverpool away to come in the following match?
Yeah, that is a question. We had the same question from Constant Stridham at Constant_8. With Liverpool in mind, should Torreira be benched against Brighton, seeing as he's one yellow away from suspension? I suspect some of this might depend on what defensive options we have. There's talk of Koscielny and Mustafi.
A lot depends on Xhaka.
Yeah. If it were me, I absolutely would not play Torreira against Brighton. I wouldn't.
Okay. I think I would. Tell me why you wouldn't.
Well, I wouldn't because I think we have to consider our chances of getting a result against Liverpool. Already very difficult. And I think would be even more difficult without Torreira. So I think when you look at what we could put out against Brighton, you know, you've got Guendouzi. I know Elneny wasn't great yesterday, but you've got Elneny. You've got Aaron Ramsey. You've got Granit Xhaka. You've got maybe Ainsley Maitland-Niles, maybe. You've got Mesut Ozil, who can play there. Alex Iwobi, not necessarily a central midfielder per se. But I think you could make a strong midfield against Brighton without Lucas Torreira. And I think a midfield that should be capable of winning the game without him. I was slightly surprised yesterday that he didn't pick up a booking.
Mm-hmm. Tactical one almost.
Yeah, a tactical one, just a shirt pull or something, whatever it might be. There was a moment where he went in on a challenge and the guy, I think he caught the guy, was one of those. It was an honest attempt to go for the ball. It wasn't a bad foul or anything, but it was one of those where I was going, is this it? Is this the booking? Because I think that would have taken the decision out of Emery's hands, obviously. Mm. And now he has a decision to make. You know, does he prioritise 3 points against Brighton with Torreira in the team? I don't know. You know, obviously
that's sort of my thinking.
Yeah, obviously two draws in the next two games would be worse than beating Brighton and losing to Liverpool. Even though we don't want to lose to Liverpool, that's the reality of that situation. So does he prioritise the 3 points and then say que sera, sera when it comes to going to Anfield? Or does he try and win the game without Torreira, who I think has been fantastic and influential? But I also think we can win games like this without him. And I'm not taking Brighton for granted, because we lost there last season, if you remember. You can't take anything for granted. But I do, I think if it were me, I would leave him on the bench. And the only way I would put him on is if we had an injury or something that really required him to come onto the pitch. Otherwise, I would put my trust in other players to get us the result.
I mean, I think Brighton, you know, they've won their last two games. They beat Palace and Huddersfield. All right, not great teams, but they won away at Huddersfield, which was a decent result for them. I think we've just got to take it a game at a time, because ultimately, like you say, two draws is worth less than one win. We aren't catching Liverpool. You know, I guess in my mind, I'm sort of thinking, I can kind of see us getting turned over there, Torreira or no Torreira. So I'd rather have the 3 points from Brighton. I'd rather give everything to get those in the bank. And then anything we get at Liverpool is a bonus. So, and also, he might come through the Brighton game without a booking.
Oh, no, that's true. It is. And we are obviously thinking about it from the worst-case scenario point of view. But let's, you know, Liverpool are a fantastic team this season and playing very well, and they're a huge threat up front. But let's not forget what we did at the Emirates against Liverpool. We weren't
completely and utterly part of that.
Exactly. So I don't think our ambition going to Anfield should be, well, let's see if we can sneak a point one way or the other, or, you know, I think we've got more about us than that this season, and certainly based on the way we played against Liverpool at the Emirates, I don't know why we should feel that inferior. Okay, the league table will make you look inferior. The defensive record is certainly inferior. But if we have Koscielny, Socrates and Mustafi in a back three at Brighton, let's say, then I think there should be enough elsewhere in the team to cope without Torreira. And he has shown this season that he is a man who will look a little bit ahead. He will look ahead when it comes to making his team selections. You know, so I suspect he'll start that game on the bench. Could be wrong, but that's what I think.
He'll probably come on and get booked.
In the 95th minute. Sore, 95th yeah. minute booking for Torreira. For scoring the winner and taking his shirt off.
Whose question is it?
I think it's my question.
I'll go on then.
Ian Stone, who's at Ian D. Stone, says, is it fair to say that all five of Emery's summer signings have worked out pretty well? Also, Ian Wone, what an absolute weapon that bloke is. Discuss. Ian Wone is the...
Do you think
Ian Wone is former Nottingham Forest player who is now the assistant manager of Burnley. So obviously Ian Stone from his position in the stadium behind the dugouts there, more or less, has seen Ian Wone. So Ian Stone is having a moan about Ian Wone.
Maybe because people mistake him for him because of a similar sounding name.
I mean, that can be for his sake.
Yeah. I did notice somebody prowling the Burnley technical area and remonstrating with the fourth official whenever possible that wasn't Sean Dyche. So I can only assume that was Ian Wone, who I remember basically for having a good left-footed shot from long range for Nottingham Forest, scoring some great goals, particularly one against Newcastle, I think, that was really good. But look, I mean, if he's associated with Burnley, he's associated with their staff, yeah, he probably is a bit of a wanker, isn't he? As for Ian's other question... They have all worked out pretty well, but I wouldn't call them Unai Emery signings. I probably would credit, you know, the executive gang led by Sven Mislintat with those signings.
Let's give them a mark out of 10 each, the signings.
Okay, yeah, because we're almost at halfway, aren't we?
Yeah, we're almost at halfway, and I don't think it's unfair to make some kind of assessment of them. So Bernd Leno, what would you give Bernd Leno out of 10?
Actually, let me have a think.
You're thinking, I give him a 7.5. 7.5 for me, I think it's...
I thought he did well against Burnley, actually. And you know, we had a discussion after Southampton about whether or not he would stay in the team. We both ultimately decided that he probably would, but I thought he responded to that mistake pretty well. And he made a very good save early on, actually, to prevent Burnley taking the lead.
Yeah, that didn't register with me as a save at first. It was only when they showed the replay.
No, it didn't register with the officials initially.
Yeah.
I think they initially gave a goal kick and then they were like, oh, no, it's a corner. Great save.
Yeah, but I mean, actually, this is where I think we can maybe talk about Matteo Guendouzi, who I would give a 7, because I think there's a lot to like about his game. But yesterday, a couple of times, we saw the inexperience, particularly in defensive situations, and that chance was one where he got a little bit caught out. He didn't quite know what to do and got it wrong and allowed the guy a shot. So for me, Guendouzi's a 7, very willing runner, enthusiastic. He's got great energy, really good passing ability. Like you say, maybe there's a little bit of the old the gamesmanship in him as well. But I still think there's a fair bit for him to learn.
I'm going to give him a 7.5, basically because I'm kind of assessing that relative to his price tag and what we expected of him. I think he's been a real find and thus a very good signing and good value. So I would go a little bit higher and say 7.5.
Okay. Stefan Lichtsteiner.
I would say, do you know what? I sort of feel like with Lichtsteiner, I constantly look at him and think, oh God, he looks a bit creaky. He looks a bit on edge. He looks a bit old at times. But equally, I can't think of any situation or goal that we've conceded where I've gone, well, that's down to Lichtsteiner.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I think sort of where I have felt his flaws most has been, basically, we've changed our game to be really reliant on what our fullbacks can produce in the final third. And I don't think he matches up to the likes of Kolasinac, Bellerin, Monreal in that respect. But in terms of what we expected from him and what he's delivered, I sort of think he's been about par for what we would think. So, I mean, maybe a 7, actually.
Right. Okay.
Seems generous, but what I mean is that, like, I kind of think he's done what we expect for a signing on a free, you know, who's just brought in to kind of be a squad body, really, and provide cover. I think he has sort of done that.
Yeah, I think he has. I mean, for me, a par would be 6. I give him a 6 out of 10. I share your view in that what we need from our fullbacks, he can't give us. So that's a bit of an issue. But if he has had an impact on the team in a positive way on the training ground in terms of attitude and character and personality and all those kind of things, then I'm on board with that too. So
I tried to make this point on Twitter, I think, but when he arrived, you know, there were, and in the early part of the season, there were genuinely people saying, well, it's a toss-up between him and Bellerin. You know, he should get a chance in the first team out of Bellerin. And I think, actually, how brilliant Bellerin has been this season has really widened that gap and almost cast Lichtsteiner in a poorer light, because I think Bellerin has become so integral to the way we play.
Yeah.
But maybe part of that is due to Lichtsteiner and the competition he provides, and maybe a little bit of coaching or advice here and there too. Yeah.
All right, Lucas Torreira.
Torreira's been great. I think he's been everything we could have hoped for. I think I'd probably have to say 8.5.
Ooh, I'm going to give him a 9. I'm going to give him a 9.
Oh, lovely.
It's Christmas. Okay. I'm feeling festive and generous.
Yeah, why not? Why not?
And who's the last one? Oh, Sokratis.
I think I would give Sokratis a 7.5.
Okay.
I think he's been great recently, but I just think, you know, that settling in period where he's kind of in and out of the team means maybe his contribution hasn't been quite as massive as I would hope, but I do very much like the look of him. What about you?
I think 7.5 as well. You know, he's had a couple of injury problems, so he hasn't really been able to properly establish himself in the team.
Yeah. And we still concede loads of goals.
Yeah, you know, there is that side of things as well. So I like him. I like him more than I was expecting to like him. So, yeah,
same.
Yeah.
We were warned. We were forewarned about him.
Yeah. But I think he's been a positive addition to the squad for sure. And 7.5 for me. So there you go. There's our signings rated. And Ian Wone flies a drone over Gatwick Airport. That's what I think.
That's what I've heard, actually.
Yeah.
If we can somehow circulate that rumour among the police, that would be quite the revenge on Heroin. The Wone drone.
The Wone drone.
Right. Let's have a look. Oh, I quite enjoyed this question. It's sort of about, I suppose, Xhaka being played at centre half and things like that. And Destructible Cake, who's at Destructible Cake, says, given both the current and previous management's ability to utilise square pegs in round holes, who was the squariest peg for the roundest hole you've seen play for Arsenal?
Oh, okay.
I mean, Bentner on the wing.
Bentner on the wing is the
one
that
springs to mind immediately.
Straight away, Bentner as a right winger absolutely springs to mind. I can remember
Sharman as a centre forward was one as well that never really worked.
I can remember seeing Theo Walcott not start but end a game at right back, which I'd say is pretty similar. Gosh, who else?
I'm trying to think now. I think you're going to have to go a long way to beat Bentner on the right wing. Because at least with Arshavin, you know, the thing about that that kind of, in theory, made sense. You know, look at how someone like Messi or Salah has managed to kind of make the false nine thing work. You know, if anything, Arsene was just ahead of his time and picking someone who was too fat and lazy. But Bentner on the wing, difficult. Difficult to explain that one, isn't it?
Andre Santos at left back, that was a hard one too.
Yeah, that was a poor fit. That was a tough one. You know, at the end of the day, what can you, you know, poor guy having to do that for so long.
Yeah.
Instead of playing in his true calling.
Okay.
A number 10 or whatever it was.
Exactly. Okay, we're going to finish off with a couple of Christmassy ones. This one comes from East Lower. Following on from We Wish You Emery Christmas, or Emery Christmas Everybody, which we'll give you a bit of in a moment. What are your other favourite Christmas songs with Arsenal-related puns? There's a few replies to this which are quite good.
Some great replies.
Yeah. Frimpong Merrily on High from Al Wayne 75. Chaz Nuki Burden, Ding Dong Emery Unai, which is very good.
That's good. Frederick Egan, All I Want for Christmas is Juru, which I enjoyed.
Eric JVC, who's at Wiltord, A Ray in a Manger.
Yes, of course. I just want your extra time and your gifts on Twitter. Says, are we not including Burkamp Wonderland? Of course, there is already an Arsenal Christmas chant.
And a podcast of the same name, of course.
Of course, yeah. Oh, and what, there was a few Chris Ray ones doing the rounds as well. I forget. Isler himself, I wish it could be Chris Ray
every day.
Yeah. Did you have a Ray in a Manger already?
I didn't. Yeah, we did a Ray in a Manger, yeah.
Once in Royal David O'Leary City. Very from good. Chief Redcoat.
Some excellent ones there. And of course,
I don't want to give away anymore because we need to come up with one next year.
Yeah, exactly. We don't want to have all these ideas taken from us. Let's do this very final one from Beardy McBeardface. Would you rather eat Christmas dinner every day all year or only ever listen to Christmas songs?
Great question. I am actually going to say, hang on, so it's the Christmas dinner is just once a day every day?
You have to eat Christmas dinner every day, all year round, or only ever listen to Christmas songs.
Christmas songs, please.
Fuck, you're nuts. You're mental. Are you out? You're out of your mind.
I love Christmas songs.
You're out of your
mind.
Listen, you know what? A friend of mine does every year. He's got a radio station here in Ireland. They get a license for 30 days. It's called Christmas FM. Many of you out there will have heard of it because it's available online at christmasfm.com. And I do some voiceover work for him. I do the voiceovers for Christmas FM. And every year it's a brilliant thing because they pick a charity partner every year. So it could be a homeless charity. This year it's a children's hospital. Previously it was a cancer charity. And they raise about, I think last year they raised maybe 250,000, 300,000 euros for this particular homeless charity. And it's amazing what they do and the goodwill it generates and the positive impact it has from the listeners of that radio station because they do a donation day. It's amazing. And he says to me, you know, I know you're doing the voiceovers, but, you know, if you want to fancy doing a show, you're more than welcome to do a few shows. And I have to say, look, Dara, I'm sorry. I would rather cut off my own fucking legs and eat them than spend 2 hours in a radio studio listening to Christmas music. I just couldn't do it. And I know we do our Christmas songs, and I produced the Christmas song. You know, we did our vocals separately, and I produced it all together. And it means
so
having
to
listen
to
it
a lot of time,
loads of fucking times. And by the end of it, I'm like, fucking kill me now. So I'm going to take Christmas dinner because there's variety in Christmas dinner. You can do all.
What do you mean? It's turkey, isn't it?
It's turkey. It's ham. It's potatoes. It's sprouts.
Well, so you would just pick and choose. You know, you'd be like, oh, today I'm going to leave the sprout. I think you've got to eat it all every day. I think that's the challenge.
by the end of it, you just get like turkey meat, ham, potatoes, sprouts, turnips, parsnips, whatever else you've got in your... And you just put it in a blender. Drink it like a Slim Fast.
Well, someone said, there was another question, I forget now, saying, what's the best Christmas snack you can make from Christmas leftovers? Oh, it was John D. Barker.
Right.
What's the best leftover snack you can make for Christmas dinner? And I was going to suggest a smoothie. Like, if you just whack it all in a, juicer and whiz it up and just down it in one. But I...
Well, the real answer, of course, is a turkey and stuffing sandwich. Just that's...
Of course, yeah, that is the correct
But you
answer,
like
yeah.
Christmas songs.
I love... Yeah, I've got to give a shout-out, actually, to my friend, Irish comedian called Kieran Dowd. I think he listens to the podcast sometimes, so hello if you're listening. Merry Christmas, Kieran. But he... I once found him sat in a bar where I was meeting him with his headphones in, and he was crying. And I was like, are you all right, mate? And it was June, and I was like, you all right? And he said, I was just listening to... Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, and it's the most beautiful song in the world. It made him cry in the middle of the summer. I don't know if he'll be happy about me somewhere like that. But he loves Christmas songs. He listens to them all year round. And I do understand. I love a Christmas song. I know it's two chords and someone talking about bells, but I'm a sucker for it, and I couldn't eat Christmas lunch every day. In fact, this year, I've got to go to my mother-in-law's house the day before Christmas, and she's doing like a fake Christmas lunch the day before Christmas, and I'm already concerned about that, about having to have it 2 days in a row.
Well, you've got to have it three days because everyone has it on the 26th as well. You have the leftovers.
Yeah, but I'll be having that as a smoothie, so that would be different.
Brilliant. Well, tell me how the smoothie goes. I'm very curious to see what it tastes like. It could be great. All those flavours.
Could it?
No.
Sprouts in a smoothie?
No. I don't think so. No, it couldn't. It couldn't be great. Well, look, I think we should take a moment just to wish everybody who listens a very merry, happy, peaceful, relaxing, festive Christmas. If you are celebrating Christmas, if you're not, we wish you all the same things, but without the presents and the booze. I think that's all right.
If you're not, just enjoy all the football. So much football.
Exactly. And look, thank you. I know we say this every week, but thank you for being with us and listening to us every week throughout the year. We've come more or less to the end of another year, and we really do appreciate your support, your listens, your comments, your tweets, your Facebook messages, your emails, all of those things are absolutely great. It touches us in our hearts and our special areas.
Yes, it does. And a special thanks, I guess, as well to all our Patreon subscribers too who joined this year. That's been a brilliant, fun adventure. So thanks to you guys.
It certainly has. So look, we will leave you right now with the now traditional, what did you call it? Massacring of a Christmas song. Was that what you called it? I can't remember.
Yeah, what could be more Christmassy than ruining a Christmas song you enjoy?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I can tell you what could be worse is having to listen to it again and again and again, as Andrew's had to. So I imagine you'll be covering your ears at this point.
I might well be, and I'll be eating Christmas dinner all year round just to avoid having to listen to any Christmas music in the future. We'll leave it there. Thanks as ever. We will be back at some point over the Christmas week with something. Don't worry about that. We will have podcasts for you this week. There's a lot of football to play, and some of it is very important football, so we won't be ignoring that among the beers and wine and mince pies and turkey smoothies and everything else. So until the next one, take it easy. Have a very happy Christmas.
Merry Christmas, guys. Bye-bye.
Tell you that the era was the best. So here it is. Every Christmas, everybody's having fun.
I'm not having fun.
So many systems now, it's hard to pick just one. So here it is. Every Christmas, everybody's having fun. Still need a Santa back, so Sven, let's get it done. So here it is. Every Christmas, everybody's having fun. Not sure we played that well, even when we won.
Merry Christmas and good evening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.